Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
When Dr. Paul Kalanithi was just 36 years old, he was on the cusp of finishing his grueling neurosurgery residency at Stanford University. He was being recruited by the top hospitals in the country, and he'd also nurtured his philosopher's souls with masters in English and the history of science. He was one of those people for whom anything seemed possible. And then Paul Kalanithi was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic lung cancer. He talked about it on a Stanford Med School podcast called One to One.
Part of the role of the physician is to deliver bad news, and the art of it is the way you deliver that news. But when you're a physician yourself and you're looking at the images yourself, there is no mediation. So I just saw, you know, all of the tumors. On one hand, it was a confirmation of what I suspected, but you know, it was crushing. I was in the hospital room with my wife, and it was a feeling as if, well, not as if, it really is that your whole projected future kind of disappears, and you're suddenly living a whole new life than the one you were 10 minutes before.
The philosopher doctor was suddenly a patient. Before operating on a patient's brain, I must first understand his mind, Kalanithi once wrote. His identity, his values, what makes his life worth living, and what devastation makes it reasonable to let that life end. Kalanithi had to achieve that understanding for himself, and he wrote about that journey in his memoir, When Breath Becomes Air. But he died before the book was published. He was just 37 years old. But his wife, Dr. Lucy Kalanithi, edited and published her late husband's memoir, and it's being called one of the best medical memoirs in recent memory. We spoke with Lucy about Paul and about When Breath Becomes Air, and we started by asking her about that moment they were confronted with his cancer diagnosis.
My first response is to say, I couldn't describe it better than Paul. And as you can probably imagine, that's something that happened to me regularly. I remember that moment very well. Standing together in the hospital room, there was a computer that one of the nurses had left, and Paul logged in and pulled up, typed in his own name, and then we pulled up that CT scan. And as we scrolled through it, from his neck down and through his chest and then through his abdomen, we saw tumors in his lungs, tumors in his liver. His spine was really riddled with tumors. And it was, we just sort of stood there silently and then kind of moved to the bed and held each other in the bed and kind of started talking softly and crying. And that was the way Paul said it was exactly right. It was very unmediated. It wasn't that a doctor came in and sort of delivered it slowly. And it was more like we stared at, the pictures of Paul's body. And it was very clear that it was metastatic cancer mm-hmm. when we looked.
Yeah. Well, he also writes in the book, and this is a quotation, he writes, "As a doctor, I had some sense of what patients with life-changing illnesses faced, and it was exactly these moments I had wanted to explore with them. Shouldn't terminal illness then be the perfect gift to that young man who had wanted to understand death?" Just the sheer fact that he could ask that question, I think, says so much about him. But it's a painful question to ask. Did the two of you talk a lot about how he was making the transition from doctor to patient?
It's funny because that question, shouldn't this be the perfect gift? Obviously, he's kind of joking, too. And that's a thing that was so great about Paul, is he was able to be kind of cheeky and talk about something sacred or reverent, in an irreverent way at times. But that's it. When he asked that question, he was getting at something deep about himself, which was that even before he became ill and diagnosed with terminal cancer, when he was 36, he had spent his whole young adult life as a real lover of literature and somebody who's he went and had a master's degree in literature and another one in philosophy, and he had always thought he would be a writer. Then he made his way into medicine because he was very interested in how we make meaning in our lives and how we despite the fact that we're all mortal, how we find and live our values and then face our own mortality. And so he'd been very interested in these big questions, you know, within the human experience his whole life. And then he himself had to face it in a very non-abstract way, first as a neurosurgeon helping other people through tough decisions. And then the last 2 years of his life, he was grappling with it very, very directly.
Yeah. What was it like for Paul when he had to stop actually being a practicing neurosurgeon? How did he experience that moment? That had to be tough, right? Because so much of, you know, what drove him was actually the practice of medicine.
It was a tough time because he was becoming more ill, and he was also kind of facing the end of his identity and career as a neurosurgeon. And interestingly, Paul had sort of, as a healthy person, mapped out this career trajectory for himself, where he planned on spending, you know, several decades as a practicing neurosurgeon and academic. And then he dreamed of kind of retiring into writing. And then the way he sort of framed it in his mind when he became terminally ill was to say, you know, it appears I'm well into my retirement now, you know, when I look at my prognosis. And so he operated as a neurosurgeon at first for a while. And then when he was able to start writing first essays and then the book proposal and book manuscript, he was actually very, very satisfied and engaged. And it's funny because now that his book is out, there's one blurb for the book by a writer named Gavin Francis. And the blurb says something like, "This is a tremendous book, crackling with life." And it's interesting because even as Paul became debilitated, he was really, really crackling with life. You know, even toward the end, I like to think of it as something like, you know, he didn't die until he died. He was very alive and engaged, and writing this book was a big part of that, a source of meaning and just a very satisfying thing for him to be doing despite being ill.
Yeah. You know, I feel like this is a really good time to actually hear from Paul again himself, a little bit more from that Stanford Med School 1:1 podcast, because, you know, we're talking about what writing meant to him. He talked about it in the podcast, and here's what he said.
You know, in fact, if you'd asked me if when I was a 16-year-old what I'd do with my life, I was, you know, certain I would be a writer. And the New York Times piece was a nice moment for me personally, in that it got a tremendous response from, you know, thousands of people. You know, I still get an email about it probably every day or every other day. And having that impact through writing was, you know, in a way redemptive for me. And so if that's something I can do for the, you know, remainder of my time, then, you know, all the better. Because, you know, you can lift a pen a lot longer than you can lift a scalpel.
That's Paul Kalanithi talking to the Stanford Med School's podcast 1:1 about a month, I believe, before he passed away. He's author of the book When Breath Becomes Air. It's an incredible memoir, and we're speaking with Paul's wife, Lucy, right now. Lucy, I wonder, hearing that excerpt from Paul reminded me of a portion of the book where he writes that the privilege of direct experience had led me away from literary and academic work, yet now I felt that to understand my own direct experiences, I would have to translate them back into language. What does it mean to you to have this language, to have these words from him now with you?
Oh, it's the best. And I'm also so happy that I have his words to share with our daughter, Katie. You know, I have a lot of pictures and videos and even that podcast. It's so wonderful to hear his voice. I'm sitting here, you know, smiling and with tears in my eyes. He wrote this book to really reflect on his intense personal experiences, but in so doing to talk about sort of big human questions that we all face. And I think that's why people are responding to the book, because it's very universal, the things he talks about. He talks about dying, but he talks a lot about living and what that means. So it's just wonderful. I'm really happy for him.
Your daughter's obviously, she's still little, right? But how do you talk about Paul with her?
So we have a lot of pictures of Paul around our house. And then there are many ways in which I'm sort of referencing him. You know, there's a goodnight song that I sing to her that has the line, "Daddy loves Katie." And I haven't taken that line out of the song, and maybe I never will. You know, at some point she'll read the book. I think I'll let her decide when, and I'll have to kind of let her have her relationship, you know, with him, in a way that makes sense to her.
Well, Lucy Kalanithi is an internist at the Stanford School of Medicine. Her husband, Paul Kalanithi's memoir, When Breath Becomes Air, is out now. Lucy, thank you so much for sharing Paul's story and your own with us. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Thank you.